My guest today is Douglas Starnes. Douglas, how you doing?
Pretty good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for being here. You're from Memphis, Tennessee, are you not?
Yes, I am.
All right. That area? Where are you from?
Well, I'm actually in the next county over next to the county that's in Memphis.
Okay.
Memphis is in.
Are you a country boy?
Not really.
Okay, just asking. That's
all. I kind of live in the country, but I get to the city as much as I can.
It's cool if you are. It's cool if you're not. What do you do in the next county over from Memphis, Tennessee?
Well, right now I'm a freelance developer.
Huh?
And I work, I'm a polyglot. I work probably mostly in Python, but I also keep my hands in the mobile space, and I've done web in the past, and I work in .NET as well. So my philosophy is, you know, whichever's the best tool for the job.
That's a good philosophy. Tell me a little about Python. My son is actually going to college right now and is taking Intro to Programming, and it's in Python.
Well, Python is one of the, in my opinion, one of the best programming languages for a beginner to learn. It's a very clean language. It's a very simple language. It doesn't have a lot of maybe the syntactic cruft that other languages have. And
well, give me an example of cruft that other languages have.
Well, for example, if you're looking at Java, say, for example, and code blocks have to be surrounded by curly braces. Mm-hmm. Python doesn't have that. Python actually uses white space or indentation to denote scope. So whereas you would if you had an if statement and you had a code block to execute for the if statement, you would surround that with curly braces in Java. With Python, what you would do is you would just indent that code block, and it would be deemed all to be within the same scope.
Okay. So, I mean, as a developer for years, I've just been indenting anyway just to make it more readable. And so the curly braces and the indentation, they're kind of redundant. They serve the same purpose, at least visually.
True. But, I mean, with Python, the indentation is required.
Right.
So so the white space is significant, actually.
Okay. But you're not a beginner, and you're using Python a lot. Mm-hmm. What do you see as the advantage?
Well, what I see the advantage for one is it's a general purpose programming language. It's one of the more popular ones. It's a very there's really very little that it cannot do.
Okay.
Obviously you can do web with it. It's great for doing just kind of one-off server administration tasks, writing scripts and things like that. Mm-hmm. It's also
things that we might use PowerShell for.
Exactly. It's great for data applications. I just did a talk a couple of hours ago about machine learning with Azure that supports Python.
Python and R are the two languages,
right, exactly,
that are included in Azure machine learning.
True, and then it's a great you can actually do mobile apps with it. There's a gentleman, Ben Rausch, I believe is his name, up in Ohio, I think is where he's from, and he has written a framework called Kivy, K-I-V-Y, that you can actually use to target iOS and Android with Python.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So kind of the same way that Xamarin or PhoneGap.
Exactly.
You can write,
yeah, right.
write the same code and it'll target both.
Right. Exactly.
Multiple environments. All right. And what are you using it for?
Right now, so what I've used it for mostly is web. It's that there's a very popular framework, it's called Django. It was actually developed by two newspaper editors. In Kansas City, I believe, and they're still maintaining the project, if I'm not mistaken. But however, and it's sort of for your CMS forms over data type application.
It's a content management system.
It's not a content management system itself, but it works best for those types of applications because of the experience for coming from the newspaper industry. And then there's a more of a micro framework out there called Flask that's very popular. That's the one that I generally use, and that's what Django. Is Django it's opinionated about how it works, whereas Flask is much more it's much more lenient in the code that you write, so as far as structure and
so Flask gives you more options and you more control as a developer,
exactly.
Whereas Django says do it this way, that's the way it's going to work.
Well, for example, Django has an ORM, Object mm-hmm. Relational Manager, that you pretty much have to use. There are ways around it, but it's easiest to go ahead and use theirs. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Flask, what you can do is you just drop it. While there are extensions for various databases that work specifically with Flask, you could just drop in PyMongo or any other
PyMongo is a library that speaks to MongoDB.
Yes, correctly.
Okay.
Yeah, correct. And where you can just drop in really any database and call the code just like you drop in any database library, that is, and call the library as if you were working from the command line. There's no difference.
Let's talk about those libraries a little bit, because the Python isn't, it's not a huge language. And most computer languages, most general purpose languages aren't huge. They rely on libraries to really extend their power. How do those work in Python?
Well, Python has, Python has a very large standard library. So C++ has a standard library. .NET has the base class library. Java has its has
the foundation classes. So this is functionality that's not actually in the language, but it kind of ships with the language's default behaviors.
Correct. And that's really what starts to give Python its power.
Okay.
So so it's doing things like handling web requests, some string handling.
Okay, maybe file I/O.
Right, file I/O, JSON handle, that kind of thing. But then also, there's a very, very strong community in Python, a very strong open source community with Python. And if you can't find something in the standard library that you need, most likely you can go out to GitHub or look for one of the Python package managers, and you'll be able to find what you need.
Okay, is Python itself open source?
Yes, Python itself is open source. It's cross-platform. It's very open. Yes.
How was it on Windows? There was actually Microsoft had an initiative that I don't think it's still active anymore to bring Python to Windows, to the .NET framework, I should say.
Well, Iron Python was Python implemented in .NET.
Right. I don't think that project is still active. I could be wrong.
If it's active, it's not very active.
Right. But it still runs. But there still is a version of Python.
Oh, yeah.
That runs on Windows. Which one? Where do I find
it? So the native Python that's implemented in C, you can get that on Windows in several ways. The first one would be to go to python.org and just download the Windows installer. Hmm. Now that's kind of a do-it-yourself type of thing. When you start installing the libraries, you start to run into problems, especially those that have C extensions. So one of the best ways to get it running natively on Windows, there is a company called Continuum Analytics out of Austin, Texas. They have a distribution called Anaconda, and it's free. It's open source. I believe there's two ways to get it. One of them is you can get kind of an all-in-one installer that installs about 200 open source packages, and basically you install it. One click and then wait. And then that will give you, basically everything you need to get started. If you don't want to have all those libraries, you can also get Miniconda, which will get a base installer, and then you say, okay, I want to have IPython, and I want to have Django, or I want to have Flask, or. It's kind of like a la carte. You get the library.
Is this kind of a package manager like NPM or NuGet?
It's similar.
It grabs the dependencies as well and brings those in.
Right, exactly. So what you could do is it has the Conda application in there, and you would say Conda install whatever library you wanted.
Oh, okay. All right. The fact that you're a polyglot programmer means that when you use Python, you choose to use Python. What's the criteria that you say this is the appropriate solution?
Well,
for Python as opposed to some other language.
Well, Python. Sometimes it just feels like what mood I'm in that day.
Okay,
but
right. So flip a coin. That's fair.
Well. I mean, it's not really a flip of a coin. But if I've been working in Python for several months, maybe I want to try C sharp or something like that.
Well, no, that's a valid point. A lot of people go the other way. They say, well, I just happen to know this tool really well, and I don't see an advantage to some other tool. I might as well just keep on doing this because I'm proficient in it.
Well, and that is a lot of the times what I'll do is, for example, I was taking when I was back in college, I was taking a C++ class in systems programming is what it was. It was actually in C, but Python is very closely related to C. So in that case, what I would do is I would actually prototype my code in Python to make sure I had the logic right, and then I wouldn't get hung up on a dangling pointer, with the C code or something like that.
Oh, because Python was just easier to implement.
Yeah, so I could prototype things faster in Python, and that's actually what I'll do even today. Sometimes, if I have some logic that I want to figure out, I'll actually prototype it in Python, and then I'll port it over to C sharp or Java or something like that. But as far as why do I use Python itself? Yes, it is part because I'm very proficient in that language, and I can write code quicker in that language because I've used it so much, and also because of all of the libraries and the clean syntax and things. But I choose to use other languages as well. Sometimes, you know, like if I want to write a Windows 10 application, I basically have to use C Sharp. Or if I want to write, or if I want to write an iOS application, I can use other. Well, I can't use C Sharp for free, but you know, I basically have to use Swift or something like that. So it all depends on the situations, and there are also some times where there are also some situations in which Python is better suited. I believe we mentioned data science, machine learning earlier.
Okay.
That's one that's something that Python is very big in. It's probably the second most popular language, only trailing only R. In data science, so if I'm going to do a data application, I'm probably going to use something like Pandas
Pandas is what?
So Pandas is, it's basically statistical data analysis library written in Python. It mirrors a lot of the functionality in R. So R, I like to say that I love what I can do with R, but I hate having to use R to do it. And that's why I use Python and Pandas.
Oh, okay. All right. So R actually is a big language that, at least in the data science space, that it has that functionality built into the language itself.
Well,
it doesn't require those libraries.
So R was developed for statistical analysis. It's actually a derivative of a I believe it's now defunct, commercial language called S, if I'm remembering correctly. However, R is open source and cross-platform and everything, but R is it has a rather narrow focus on data. I mean, it does one thing and does it very well. Now, it's been extended, so like there's a library, I believe it's called Shiny, that you can use to write web applications in R, but you're going to have a much easier time doing it in Python. And that's another nice thing about Python. You know, it has a strength such as data science. But if you need to get your results out on the web, well, you've got a language that's also just equally as strong on the web.
Okay, and then Python is is it a strongly typed language or what's the?
No, Python is a dynamically typed language. So it's dynamically typed. It's interpreted, or rather, I guess I should say, it uses type inference.
So type inference implies that it is strongly typed, but it's strongly typed at runtime. Is that right?
Yeah. What it will do is it will, if given a variable, it will determine that variable's type based on the type of the value that's currently assigned
to it. Right. And once it's determined it, then that's what the type is. It's not like a variant where you can change it.
No, it can change. Right, so if you say A equals 42, and then on the next line, A is an integer. On the next line, if you say A equals hello world, A is now a string.
Okay, so it's actually a loosely typed language.
Yeah.
Is that an advantage or is that a disadvantage? Or does it depend?
Well, it depends. I can definitely tell you that in the case of tooling, it's kind of a disadvantage because sometimes the tooling has to guess what's going on.
Okay.
So, but also a lot of Python programmers don't really use... I mean, there's a very popular IDE called PyCharm by JetBrains. They make the ReSharper product for Visual Studio, and that one's actually one of the better ones that's out there. But a lot of Python programmers they use Vim. They go back that far.
Sure.
But and then Atom and Sublime are very popular as well. I've noticed that that Visual Studio Code has Python support in it. The new Visual Studio Code.
Okay. All right. Well, I want to be able to help my son with his homework.
Okay.
I know a few programming languages, but not Python at all. What do you recommend me to do to learn Python?
Well, the first thing, so there's several things to do. First of all, install Anaconda if you want to get started.
Okay. Where do I find that?
You go to continuum.io, or actually if you just Google with Bing.
We'll bingle it.
Yeah, okay, bingle. If you Anaconda download, it'll take you to that should be the first one that comes up. And that would be the first thing. Or what if you don't want to install anything? Are you familiar with Cloud9?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cloud9. So that's a service basically gives you a web-based IDE and a small Linux virtual machine in the back end.
Okay.
And so what you've got is Ubuntu running on the back end, and it's Python's already installed. Now, one thing that you do need to be aware of with Python is that there are actually two different versions out right now.
Okay.
There's a Python 2 track and a Python 3 track. Now, all of the innovation is going towards Python 3.
Makes sense.
So Python 3, in fact, it's been for about a year now, it's been announced that the only updates to Python 2 are going to be maintenance updates. But there's still an awful lot of Python 2 code out there. In fact, some libraries still are not compatible with Python 3. There's very few of them, but most of the things that you're going to want to use are. But the thing to keep in mind is that when you're installing something like Anaconda, that you want to make sure that you get the Python. Probably want to make sure that you get the Python 3 version because Python 2 and Python 3 are not necessarily compatible syntactically.
All right. Yeah. Do you have an online presence?
I'm sorry?
Do you have any online presence or anything of that?
Oh, yeah. I have my Twitter. My Twitter is powered by AltNet, A-L-T-Net. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also DouglasStarnes.com is my domain.
Douglas, thanks so much.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Well, one of the best ways to make friends in technology as far as Python is concerned would be to get involved in the Python open source community. And in fact, if you look locally, especially if you live in a larger city, a way to make friends in Python would be to join your local Python user group. And there also might be a local technology co-op or a technology foundation in your town, and you can make friends there in any language that you have.